You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk covering every team in the NHL. New episodes every Monday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Pigskin fans, the moment you've been waiting for all season is right around the corner. And DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of Super Bowl 55, is bringing back their golden ticket giveaway with up to $55 million in prizes up for grabs. All you have to do to get your share of these huge prizes is enter DraftKings' free Super Bowl prediction challenge. Once you submit your picks, you will get a free instant prize up to $25,000. And if you have the most predictions correct, you could win the top prize of $1 million. Download the app now, enter the free prediction challenge, answer the questions like, who'll score last? And boom, get ready to make it rain. DraftKings has paid out over $7 billion to its players since 2012. They know a thing or two about big plays. Download the DraftKings app now and use the promo code THPN to enter the free $55 million Super Bowl prediction challenge. Everyone gets an instant prize up to $25,000 just for playing. So use promo code THPN now to enter the free $55 million Super Bowl challenge. Only at DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner at Super Bowl 55. Terms and conditions and eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
It's the burger!
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to episode 4 of the Rig Rats podcast. Kyle is here to join me this week, no longer flying solo. Kyle, it's so glad to hear your voice.
Hi, folks. How are you? Sorry I wasn't able to get the last one. Had a busy Sunday.
Hey, man, don't we all? Don't we all? I mean, listen, I will say you missed a hell of a guest.
I listened into it. Wonderful commentary between the two of you.
Yeah, Benders is a good guy. So if you guys haven't listened to the last episode, I highly suggest you go and listen to it. He's a good listen to. But Kyle, we've got some Oilers games to talk about. And
we do indeed.
In the last episode, you know, I was giving my predictions. I was predicting two Oilers wins. You know, I never go against the team, as the listeners to this podcast will hear. They'll notice that I always predict the Oilers to win almost. And so because of that, I was, you know, I don't know. I felt that we had an opportunity here to pull 500. And I think we'll start with the first game here. Kind of an interesting one. I'd say the first period, I actually got to watch this one in its entirety. The first period was interesting because it was a little bit more of a feeling out period between both teams. You could tell that they were tentative. This was the first time they'd seen each other this season. So they were still, you know, there's that feeling out process. It was sort of a back and forth affair. The Jets would score, the Oilers would tie, you know, the Jets would score, the Oilers would tie. Eventually the Oilers did go up one and take that lead into the third period, which was blown about halfway through the third period. And then it looked like we were going to go to overtime, which is a theme versus the Jets in the last year. It seems we always go to overtime versus the Jets. And then with 0.7 seconds left on the clock, I mean, McDavid and the big boys are out there. Yep. And McDavid just throws it back in front of the net after sort of fanning on his first pass. And Draisaitl snaps one home for the game winner. That one, I thought that was a huge win. I mean, like, yeah. That's got to be such a good feeling in the locker room, like that 0.7 second. I don't know. I feel like that's like a come together win for the boys.
Oh, yeah. As a guy that has been on the ice for a couple of close wins there down to the end, down to the last minute, that's something. When you win by 7 goals, it's like, cool, we won. When you win by 1 goal with 10 seconds left, 0.7 seconds left in a game, it's like, oh, yeah, we did that shit. Let's go, right? So, I mean, it really fuels the boys. I think as a way to put it home, you know, obviously Connor knows where he's putting the puck. So he threw it out in front. And
Draisaitl was just he's just throwing it. He's throwing it. He's no, oh, yeah. There's no time left, right? He's just throwing it. And there was a ton of bodies in front. One of the big things that we talked about, or I guess one of the big things talked about before going into this game, was that Puljujarvi had been elevated to the top line with McDavid and Nugent Hopkins. And I thought this was probably one of Puljujarvi's best game as an Oiler.
Yeah, I think as we had said, in the first couple shows, we had said his time overseas was going to help him out, make him, mature him a little bit. And I think it has. I think he's playing, he's settling into his shoes. He's finding his rhythm, his game, bumping up to playing with Connor and Nuge are, it's hard to be bad when you play with those two guys, but I think throwing him up there with that kind of skill and they're always looking for the next pass, the next play. I think it's really adding to his maturity, and I agree, he's playing much better than he had a couple of years ago.
And one of the interesting facets to the way this season goes is in previous seasons, at least for the most part against non-divisional teams, like Winnipeg would, I would get excited for overtime. I was always excited for the prospect and I didn't really mind it. We would get a point and then it was almost guaranteed, the Oilers are going to get another point with McDavid and Draisaitl in 3-on-3. And right. And that's just a fun time to watch. Like everyone wants to tune into
three. Exciting hockey.
Exactly. But with the way that, the North Division and the whole season is set up now, right. You don't, like, now I'm sitting here and I'm watching the clock run down and they score and that 0.7 second left goal is huge. But then I thought, oh my God, that's even better because Winnipeg doesn't get any points either, which is it's such an interesting little tweak. Cause now as a fan, I don't want overtime at all.
Yeah. Well, and so I heard, I don't remember which game I was watching. I was watching one of the games from around the league on NBCSN the other day, and one of the analysts was like, the way the season's set up, where you're only playing intra-divisional play, so you're only playing within your division, every game is a four-point game.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? As much as you can only win 2 points, it's a four-point game because they could win 2 points and you have none, and now they're, it's a four-point swing either way, or if you let them get, if you go to overtime, they get a point. Like right now, the I guess it's the Central. The Blue Jackets are at the top of the Central with 2 wins and 3 overtime losses.
Yeah.
Now the three teams under them have played the two teams under them have played 3 games, and then the Lightning have played 4 games, and they've played 7. But still, they're at the top of the leaderboard with 3 overtime losses and 2 wins. So points are extremely important because you're not playing anyone else. So it's not like it doesn't matter when you're playing outside of your division because you can't.
And even in the post game after this game, Coach Tippett was talking about how, you're looking at the out of town scoreboard from the other games and you're really hoping to only see 2 point nights. You don't want any 3 point games from any of the other divisional teams either.
Right.
So here's one of the things I will say before we get to the next game that bothered me watching the pre and post game of this is the media is blowing any move that Puljujarvi makes. Just like they asked every person in their post game media availability about Puljujarvi's change and his improvement. And I understand that's a story this year, but and he got moved up to that first line. He played really well. But then after it, instead of asking them about, the team win or the lines play as a group, they spent like half of their immediate availability asking all the other players about Puljujarvi. And I don't know, it just annoyed me. It's like, come on, like you can't ask him anything else.
Yeah.
But maybe it's just me.
That's
maybe
one of the things that I usually love about hockey. No, I definitely agree. I think that's one of the things that I usually love about hockey. I mean, I'll tell anybody, it's when you hear championship speeches, like go listen to any LeBron James championship speech after he wins the finals. I did this. I did that. I carried the team. I. Now, then you conversely listen to any of Jonathan Toews' 3 Stanley Cup championship interviews right after. He talks about the rest of his team, his line, his goalie, his family. Never once will he say the word I. And so that's usually one of the things that I love about hockey. And so I agree with you. Spread it out. It's a team game. You know, you can make, you know, if somebody does something insane, sure, ask a few things about that one guy. But like you said, over half of the availability is about one guy. For what, you know?
I don't know. Like Puljujärvi had one assist. It was his best game of the season. There were so many other like little bits that they were asking about, just like
right.
that like didn't really have anything to do with the game, I guess.
Well, there's that game was a good game, you know. It was kind of a come behind, you know. They weren't down by three at any point or anything, but it was big win there.
I mean, so before we move on, and this is a theme that carries through to the next game, right? The Oilers go into the third period with a one goal lead, and I'd say within 2 minutes, with like 8 minutes left, they're down by one all of a sudden, and right, they have to tie it and then score again to take the lead, and you don't want to put yourself in that situation. And so then I'll take that as then a segue to the next game. I was actually at work for the first two periods, and I'm looking at my phone. I'm checking. I see that, and I'm watching the highlights now. It seems like the Oilers were buzzing early. They were on them. The Jets also came out with some intensity, and even in the, you know, the pregame, they were talking about how they've won the first game, and the Oilers – in the last little bit have a lot of times been behind on the first game. And so they're trying to even like the two game series on the second game. So now they're ahead and they know that the Jets are going to be coming to try and even it up. And so both teams were buzzing and pushing early, and then kind of a crazy first period, the Oilers push ahead. Their power play has started to click. Which is unbelievable to see.
Beautiful.
And Draisaitl scored again. Like Draisaitl scored in four straight, right? Yeah. McDavid scoring, Nugent Hopkins starting to score. The big boys are starting to score.
Right.
Turris had his first in the last game, but I don't know. I'm starting to see, I'm starting to feel that depth scoring squeeze again.
Yeah. The Turris goal was pretty though. I'll tell you that, right over his shoulder. That was a good shot.
Great goal. But like, it's just, I'd like to see that a little more often, I guess.
Yeah, you know, like you mentioned, the power play starting to click. I think that the loss to Winnipeg, they went 2-for-2 on the power play, and then they had one power play goal in the win. But then there was one of their power plays where it was one of the goals came a second or 2 seconds after the power play had ended. So while technically we weren't on the power play anymore, that guy that came out of the box had not gotten back into the play. So I still count that as a power play unit goal, you know, even though it won't show up on the stats as one, that power play unit put that one in.
Well, the Jets had one like that as well.
Right as
one of the Oilers had stepped out of the box and they scored. So I think the Jets only went 1-for-4 on the power play in this one. And you could argue they actually went 2-for-4.
Yeah. You know, I think it was nice. It was definitely nice to see the power play. I think throwing James Neal on there kind of adds a little, like you were saying last podcast, even if he's not Connor, he's still a good presence to have, whether on the ice, in the locker room, on the bench. That's one of those guys. He's been in the league a while. He's proven himself, and you feel comfortable having that guy on the ice. So I think it's nice to add him and get Chase on off that first unit. So
another big change to the power play that they made is Tyson Barrie has been taken off of the first power play. They moved Nurse to the first power play. And I mean, he had two assists in this game on the power play. And I think also just in general, everyone has, like, you can tell the passing is a lot more crisp as a unit. I definitely think there was a little bit of rust to shake off and familiarity to regain between them at the beginning of the season. But I mean, the big story in this one is the Oilers have a one goal lead going into the third period. I was getting off work, seeing this one goal lead going into the third period, really excited. I get home, turn on the TV, I throw my jersey on, and about in that time it took, the Oilers were down by two. Within 3 minutes and 30 seconds, the Jets score the tying goal to go up by one and then to go up by two. The Oilers would eventually, Connor would score to, bring it within one.
Another pretty
again.
Goal.
Yes, yeah, uh-huh. And that's the thing. It breaks my heart because, like, I just want to, like, right? Connor goes crazy. And we still lose that game. And we, right? We lose 6-5. It just.
And I think in that game, like, I think there was. I think a little bit of that one, there's a, like, there was a tad bit of a, not a coaching issue, but a mishap per se, because you should probably take your time out, you know, leave that first line out there.
I saw a lot of people on Twitter angry.
A minute and a half or something like that. It was a little more than a minute and a half or something. You could take your time out and leave your big boys out there, but instead you throw the third line out. There's a time and a place, and that was not it for the third line. You know what I mean? You know, not to say that they would have scored 2 or 3 goals, whatever, but they could have.
Well, I mean, at this point, the big boys are the only ones scoring, basically. So,
right.
I mean, you're just playing the odds. Like, they're more likely to score than your third line.
Right.
And I agree. Yeah. Like, and there's actually been a couple times over just Tippett's tenure as the coach here where I'm like,
yeah,
you probably could have used your timeout to, like, calm things down, right? Because you let in 3 goals, right? They've tied the game, and then they've gone up by 2 now in less than 5 minutes. Like, I don't know. Just as I have only coached little kids, and just as a gut, I would have taken my timeout right there.
Yeah.
I probably would have taken my timeout after they went up by 1, to be honest. But even before the third.
Slow the momentum a little bit.
Just, like, to take a timeout and look at everyone on the bench and be like, hey, wake up. What is going on?
You want to,
like, take a deep breath
together here?
Yeah. I don't know. And then I also saw there was some on some of the plays. There was just some weak defending. People not strong enough on their sticks in front of the net. Paul Stastny made an incredible play, but, like, I don't know. The defense was weak there. I mean, he brushed him off too easily.
Yeah. And I think that goal was, I don't remember, Kopp maybe was in front and 2 guys go to him. And I, you know, I'm all for collapse to the guy in front of the net, but then you're laying on top of him and get up. You know what I mean? And Stastny scores that one. He's standing there mano a mano with Koskinen, and it's not, you know, there's not much that he can really do. He can only get so big in front of that, especially with worrying about the 3 guys piled in front of him on the crease. I think it was a pretty good game overall, and I think both of these games are actually very well matched. Like, you know, if you go back and you look in, you know, the box score and stuff, and you look at the stats, the shots are close. Face-offs are close. All of these numbers are really close. These are 2 pretty well-matched teams, I would say. I think in the loss, though, the wheels just kind of fell off the train in the third period, and then they didn't have enough time to put all of the wheels back on, you know?
I'm going to be honest. I was so pissed about the third period just watching it. Like, I haven't watched any of the post-game interviews yet. I just, like, I haven't brought myself to do it. Like, they sting so much more when everyone else, like, Connor scores a couple nice ones, Dreisaitl's got a couple, Nugent Hopkins scores on the power play. Like,
yeah.
I just, oh man, it's brutal. So, I mean, right now we're sitting at 3-5, 8 games in. There hasn't been enough consistency, I think.
I would agree.
And I don't really want to pile on Koskinen or anything, because he's really the only goalie we have right now. So I need him as confident as possible. But, like, especially in this game, like, eventually you want him to save at least one of them.
Yeah. Right?
There were a couple that there's nothing he could do, but there were a couple
of some,
ones.
There were some couple,
like,
weird bounces.
I was like, you would have liked him to have that one.
Yeah. I think there was a couple that had a little puck luck or some extra forces at play there, but I would agree. There's definitely a couple where you're like, you didn't get that one. Are you sure you don't want to try again?
All right. So we are going to take a quick break here. We will be right back.
Calling all Jets fans and foodies. What's going on, guys? I'm Brandon Rewicki, the host of Skates and Plates on the Hockey Podcast Network. Look, if you love Jets hockey, this is the place for you. In-depth breakdowns from every game, a deep dive into the big plays and moments from Winnipeg's season, and all the Jets talk you will not find anywhere else, we got it for you on Skates and Plates. Plus, if you love carbs and everything tasty, we jump into the world of food as well. Once a week, we also speak with a member of the local culinary scene to highlight their great stories and the great food they put out. So there it is. Hockey, Jets, food, drink, everything good in life. It's right here on Skates and Plates on the Hockey Podcast Network.
All righty, and we are back. We're going to transition a little bit away from the Oilers' losses for my mental health, and we're going to talk about a little bit more around the NHL news, and there's really one big thing to talk about right now. It's been a story since the season came back. You know, there was a lot of holdout and anxiety between Dubois and the Columbus Blue Jackets. Eventually, they signed him to a smaller bridge deal. And then he just gave the worst effort possible in his first couple of games, was benched in his game versus the Lightning. And after just a really bad shift, I mean, I'm sure if you guys haven't seen it, you should go and watch the video. It's about a 45-second clip of him hopping off the bench, really just not paying any attention to what's going on the ice, drifting around. And then Johnson skates right by him and he puts his stick up and skates back to the bench. And like, it's just a useless shift. And from your first line center, it's not a good look. So they bench him. And then the news comes out a couple days ago. And I talked about this a little bit on the last episode with Bender. So we're not going to go too into it, but Dubois for line A, not one for one, which was interesting. I was actually listening to the 31 Thoughts podcast and they had Jarmo Kekäläinen on, the GM of the Blue Jackets. And he was talking about how it was never one for one. Dubois, there had to be more involved for Dubois than just Dubois or just Laine. So the Jets send Laine and Roslovic to the Jackets, and the Jackets send Dubois and a third to the Jets. And Dubois gets into a bigger market, I would say, even though the Jets are still a smaller hockey market. I think the Canadian market compared to the Columbus market is probably a little different. Laine then, you know, after I'd say he's had some ups and downs, joins the Columbus Blue Jackets and joins Kekäläinen, who's a fellow Finn as well. And it also in the 31 Thoughts podcast, Kekäläinen was very interested and wanted to get Laine, getting my Finns mixed up, that he wanted to get him in the second, the third round when Oilers took Puljujärvi instead of Dubois because they wanted to move up and get Laine. What is your take on it, Kyle?
So I think when they get traded, you know, one of the big staples of your team gets moved. You know, they make your nice post on social media, letting you know, thanking the fan base and telling the new fan base, hey, I'm here to play. And I saw that, you know, Laine was shocked because, you know, I know he's had his struggles, but I do still think he has one of the best shots in the league when he's on fire. When he's hot, his shot is lethal. Honestly, if I'm the Jets, watching the way Dubois handled that, I don't want him. He's a great forward. That is a terrible attitude.
Like you're talking that like from shift, a teammate perspective, like
the just a team, you know, an attitude in general, just, you know, in the locker room. I haven't heard much about him. I don't know that he's, you know, a menace or anything. And you know, I know firsthand when Tortorella was in Tampa coaching, you know, he's a hard ass. There's no getting around it. And him getting benched in the middle of a game is classic Tortorella move, but he deserved it, guaranteed. I mean, that shift, like you said, was atrocious.
But is that a Tortorella move? Like, I feel like most coaches, like, if you give that effort and you are right, like, I really think, like, anyone in the lineup, right? Like, most coaches are going to see that, and you're probably going to start losing shifts.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. But I think I'm sure he caught the riot act, whether it was on the bench or after the game. I'm sure Torts tore him a new one because it was embarrassing. I don't care how much you don't want to play in the city anymore. That was embarrassing for yourself. Take a little pride. You know what I mean? You're still playing hockey. Show up. Even if you know you're getting traded, show up. So I think, you know, I think Winnipeg, their staff should sit down and have a conversation with them and be like, hey, listen, we brought you here. Don't do that shit. So that's what I think.
You got to think he's only got a few more of those in his career. And then eventually everyone's like, all right, it doesn't matter how good of a hockey player you are. Like, you're not playing exactly the NFL anymore.
Yeah. I think personally, I would take a locker room guy, somebody, you know, who's pretty good at hockey, but is a great teammate, a great energy on the bench, in the locker room, just for the environment, a wonderful attitude, over a guy that's a little more skilled, but worse with his teammates. You know what I mean? Worse with the organization. You know, so
yeah, we've played. We've played with guys like that before.
Yeah, that's just me. I used to be that locker room guy. I was the guy that I was just, you know, I was there for the laughs in the locker room. I'd throw a couple big bodies, get the energy going. I don't know. I think I wish them both the best, and I hope Dubois pulls his head out of his ass and figures it out for himself that, hey, maybe I should actually try to play hockey next time instead of being a 12-year-old. We'll see how it goes. You know, I don't know how it works with the quarantine protocols. I'm sure it's got to be 2 weeks before either of them see the ice.
Well, right? Dubois. Dubois won't play for Winnipeg for at least 2 weeks. Right. The transition from
because
the U.S. U.S. to Canada is much difficult. I was reading Roslovic might even play as soon as this coming Thursday for the Jackets.
Yeah.
So Laine and Roslovic will be on the ice a lot sooner, whereas Dubois definitely will have to wait a little bit longer.
Yeah.
You got a way too early prediction on like who has a better career with their new teams?
Yeah, Laine takes it.
Yeah.
I think, you know, he was injured. I think as soon as he comes off of that, he starts getting it. You got Max Domi there. You got Seth Jones.
I forgot Domi plays there. Damn. Yeah, that is kind of nasty.
Yeah. You know, you have – so think about that. That's a kind of a nasty power play line. Laine, Domi, Seth Jones in the back end, Werenski in the back end, and I don't know who else you put up there. I mean, you could put up anybody else up there if you wanted to. I guess maybe that new kid.
I mean, you've got, like, Bjorkstrand. You've got Foligno. I mean, if you really want, you could probably –
Foodie's honestly pretty good.
Texier looks pretty nasty. Like, they've got some interesting players.
If you want size, you throw Boone Jenner in front and let him sit there and eat pucks in front of the net. Those four guys, that fifth guy is completely interchangeable. I think that works out well for Line A. I mean, obviously, in Winnipeg, you still have, you know, they got Ehlers and Blake Wheeler and – you know,
I was talking to our resident Winnipeg Jets insider, Chris. Yeah, you know Chris.
What a pal. I love Chris.
And so he was actually stoked for this trade. He was very excited. He was sad to see Laine and Roslovic go, but he was more excited about the incredible center depth that Dubois now gives the Jets, right? Because now you've got Scheifele, you've got Dubois, Wheeler. Right? Yeah, you've got Wheeler, and you can throw a cop out there as well as a center. So he was really excited about their center depth. You've got Stasny, Perreault, like they've got some strength down the middle now.
Yeah. So I mean, two completely different players. First of all, their styles are absolutely completely different. Like I said, Laine is purely a shooter, right? And I mean, skilled hockey player, don't get me wrong. But I think Dubois is more of a stick handle, look for the pass, quick shot kind of guy instead of – I compare Laine to more like Ovi, where you give him a little time and it's a guaranteed goal kind of thing. Obviously, Ovi's better.
If we're comparing people, Dubois, to be honest, reminds me a lot of like a prime Jonathan Toews.
Yeah.
Right?
I would agree with that.
Like really defensively sound, plays physical, nasty hands, good feet, you know. I don't know. That's the vibes he gives me.
I would agree with that. And so, like I said, if Dubois can, like I said, figure out his – Whatever that attitude lapse was, there, you know, I understand your displeasure, I guess, with the organization. But if that's the case, if you don't want to show up and play hockey, tell them you're not going to show up and play hockey. Don't show up and give that. So I think once he figures it out, you know, once he decides what kind of hockey player he's going to be, I think it'll definitely be gross. You know, it's a good addition to Winnipeg, which is scary for editorial fans, but because it adds another piece to the puzzle that you really have to watch. Personally, I think Lionel will do better. I don't know. That's just my take.
And then the last piece of really news I have from around the league, it's not super huge, but it just came out at least at the time we're recording this. The Pittsburgh Penguins longtime GM Jim Rutherford resigns for personal reasons. They haven't released, I don't know if they ever will, but we don't know what the personal reasons are. So I guess I wish him all the best and, you know, whatever's going on there. But I guess it's kind of crazy anytime you see a GM just vacate the position like that.
Right. Especially one, you know, like he's been with Pittsburgh for a long time. So, you know, and he's obviously had some, you know, great moves, had a good team for a hot minute. I mean, those guys are always consistent. So I think I agree. Just wish him the best and, you know, hope everything's okay. Anytime you see personal reasons, you can't help but, you know, be scared for whatever's going on with himself or his family or, you know, whatever the deal is. Hopefully there's nothing bad that happened that caused it. Maybe it's just, you know, he said it was time to retire, go be with his family and ride off into the sunset on a golden line or something.
I'll be interested to see what directions the Pittsburgh Penguins decide to take, because I would say really, at least while he's been GM, at least for the last little bit, they haven't really had a direction. You know, it's kind of felt like they're sort of holding on to Crosby and Malkin.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see whoever does end up taking his position. I mean, obviously, I'm pretty sure the assistant GM is going to take over the day-to-day for now, and then they may hire him or hire someone else. Right. I'll be curious to see how they how the team changes because of this.
Like I said, he you know, for his tenure, it was they had a great run. They, you know, they strung together a couple back-to-backs. You know, they had that one back-to-back cup wins. So, but I agree. I think they definitely need to. Crosby's amazing. Malkin's amazing. But they need to inject a little more youth into their organization, kind of find a new direction. We'll see how the Penguins do. Yeah, that's about it for me.
So then looking ahead to next episode, there are three games in between this Thursday episode and the Monday episode that'll come out on this coming Monday. We have two games versus Toronto, so that will bring us up to four versus Toronto for the season. And then we go Saturday to Sunday with a back-to-back Toronto and then Ottawa. So that's three games in four days. So I'll start with the Toronto two games. We split the first two series with them. The first one was, I'd say, interesting. The Oilers got a lot of puck luck in their first win over Toronto, but it was more of a defensive battle. I'd say it was the most defensive game played all season. And they got the win versus Toronto. And then the second game was a little bit more of what we expected from the Toronto games, a little bit more open. And Toronto was able to come away with the win for that one. So I guess what do we expect in this one? Do we, especially coming off of these hard fought, but a tough loss versus Winnipeg.
Looking at Toronto in general, they're on the top of the division here. I think they're 6-2, which comparatively to the rest of the division, at least, that's a good record. I think, like we were saying the last time we were talking about Toronto, their stars are firing. They have a lot of offensive firepower. So, I mean, it'll definitely be a tough game. I definitely think, much like the first game against Toronto, they'll have to push defensively hard if they want to come out with another win. If we can stay 500 or above with Toronto, that's your best case scenario. You know what I mean? You obviously you want to win both games here, but I think at least you need to win one just to keep even with this series. One of the toughest teams in the North Division. There was a lot of scuttlebutt about them, you know, coming into the season. I think those games will be interesting. I got a little grit on the shoulder about this last loss, as they should. Hey, who knows? Maybe we'll even see a win streak pull together here if they can figure it out.
First one of the season. Listen, if they can string two wins together, I will be just over the moon. So then looking at their last matchup, it is on the back half of a back-to-back. And the Oilers actually played really well on the second half of back-to-backs last season. I think they only lost one or two of them last season. And it's also taking on, and no disrespect to Ottawa, but probably, you know, yeah, they're playing Ottawa. Like I said, I wanted to say, and I even say one of my hot takes in episode one was Ottawa is going to make the playoffs. So I definitely don't think the Oilers should sleep on Ottawa at all. And Ottawa has not been helping my prediction at all either. So I guess I would be worried about the Oilers maybe sleeping on Ottawa, but depending on how they come out of these Toronto games, they might come out of it really hungry to pick up some points versus Ottawa.
Obviously, conversely to the Maple Leafs, Ottawa is last in the North Division, obviously just crushing your hopes so far for your prediction. But I really do think they'll pull through, and I agree with you. They can't sleep on them. You know, I played enough sports in my life to know that when you go into a game thinking you're going to win, it is way too tight. If you come out with the win, it was way too tight of a game the whole time, way tighter than it should be. You got to treat every game like it's going to be the hardest game you play all season. And that's how you win hockey games convincingly and consistently. I agree. You know, depending on what happens with Toronto, I think they really have to show up. You know, it's tough to play a back-to-back, you know, especially when you're usually used to you're getting a day off in between kind of deal, but it'll be interesting to see what happens. And like I said, I think Ottawa is probably going to, they'll show up. I think they're also doing the need a minute to soak in, set their feet, figure out what they want to do, waiting for those pesky Canucks to figure themselves out.
And so I guess before we wrap up the episode here, I'm going to ask you for we're going to go do some score predictions. So game one versus Toronto, what do you think?
3-2 Edmonton win, and the defense comes out hot, shuts down that high-powered offense.
All righty. I'm going to say this one's going to be a 4-3 OT win.
Giving up those extra points.
Unfortunately, but hey, I'll take the dub. All right, game two, what do you think?
I think game two, I think Edmonton plays it too conservative because they're expecting the back to back, they're expecting a little fatigue, and they want guaranteed win on against Ottawa. So I say they probably come out too slow. They'll probably eat one. I'll say 3-2 the other way, overtime.
3-2 overtime loss.
Yes.
I'm actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm changing my prediction. All right, I'm gonna say game one. We lose 4-3 in overtime.
Interesting.
Then I'm going to say we win game two versus Toronto.
Okay.
5-2.
Wow. Big showing from the boys.
Yeah. We lose that one. And then we get our first two wins in a row. I'll go straight into Ottawa. And we beat Ottawa 2-1.
Oddest game.
A modest game. Yeah. We expect to beat them by more. It's a tight game, but we still leave with the full 2 points.
Yeah, I'll double down on that one. I agree. I'll double down on that last
one. You joining me with the 2-1 win?
I'll join you on the 2-1 win. I think that's probably that's a good take there.
So then, that's a pretty solid, I don't know if it's a road trip, but that's a pretty solid 3 games for the Oilers there. I mean, we're saying we're both predicting they pick up five out of a possible 6. So I'll take it.
I'll take that. I'll take those odds.
All righty. Yeah. Well, I mean, Kyle, you got anything else to add, my friend?
Oh, hot plays from around the league. Got any good plays you like this week?
I'm going to give mine to an old man in the league nowadays. Shout out, my top play of the week is going to go to Patrick Hornquist for a backhand out of midair bat in goal for the Panthers last night, because he plays for the Panthers now. What about you, buddy? You
I'm going to give mine. I do. I'm going to give mine to Brent Burns. Guy showed up with the silky mitts out of nowhere. He was like, nah, I'm going to be good today. And he just did some gross stuff. I mean, he's always solid defensively, but sometimes a little dangle in front and he throws it out. I love those off the hip, the off the hip backhands.
Yeah, you pull it all the way.
You pull it all the way across, and it's just like all wrist, all hand, so hard to pull off.
I don't know if you saw Barzell did the same thing to the Capitals. Yeah. That open hip backhander where you pull it all the way out, like you're almost loading up for a wrist shot on the backhand, and then just whoop, upstairs.
Gorgeous.
I wish I could do that. That sounds fun.
I did that once like 2 weeks ago. It was pretty nice. It was pretty. Not as pretty as anybody else. And it was on a C-League beer league goalie. But it was still pretty. It was a little nice end-to-end rush. So,
well, if I can throw some shade at the Minnesota guys, that's basically who they had in that game anyways.
Ooh. Ooh. Roasted.
Alrighty, well, we are going to wrap it up here before I dig myself in any more trouble here with Isha and Dylan. So it has been a pleasure talking to you. Everyone, be sure to follow the Rig Rats here on Twitter. That's going to be @TheRig_Rats on Twitter. Be sure to like and subscribe, leave a comment. It helps out a great deal. Be sure to subscribe to the Hockey Podcast Network on Twitter @HockeyPodNet. To keep track of all the awesome jersey giveaways and competitions we do. And I believe the Oilers did beat the Flames in the first jersey bracket, but now we're losing to the Krakens, and we can't let that happen. So we got to get in there. We got to vote. We got to get the Oilers over the Krakens, because we cannot lose to a team that's not even
an unestablished team.
Yeah. So go follow @HockeyPodNet and vote on that. And we will talk to you guys in the next one. And let's go Oilers!
Let's go Oilers! Connor McDavid!